All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. As always, I'm your host, Brendan Farrell, and this week I am once again joined by the Daily Journal's very own James Murphy. James, how are you?
Pretty good, Brendan. Pretty exciting weekend of sports, and especially in March Madness.
Don't know about you, but it was a very exhausting weekend because it's like there's basketball on all day. And then, you know, like Sunday, you know, I'm watching like USA Mexico soccer. And I'm like, I totally forgot this was this weekend just because there are like every single sports going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like hockey and basketball are still going on.
Right.
You know, the MLB's in spring training. And it's like my brain just like hurts.
It does. But it's all, but is there a better time of year for sports with all this going on? And even we're even close enough to the NFL draft where excitement's building for that.
I would say probably next weekend, because technically the baseball will actually count next weekend. So
very true, yeah.
But yes, we are recording this on Tuesday, March 26th. James and I both write for the Daily Journal. You can see all of our coverage at djournal.com and follow us on social at djournalsports. You can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727 and James on Twitter at jsmurphymedia. So, James, we had one Mississippi school make the tournament. The other one did not. How did it go for Mississippi State?
Not terribly well. They came up against Michigan State and Charlotte in the first round, and it just seemed that whatever punch they were able to throw, Michigan State was able to throw several more harder punches that ultimately equated to a pretty decisive win for the Spartans, and they were able to build off of that and still show that they're fairly formidable in March.
Yeah. So going back to our predictions from last week, I was happy at least that my bracket made it through one game, and I think one game only before going bust. So woohoo. I don't know if that was your experience, but I don't think it was.
No, it went bust right away. And since then, things have transpired pretty well, but right off the bat, started off with a dud.
Yeah, I don't know about you. It just never really felt like State was really all that in this game. I believe State never led. So it was a nice little wire-to-wire win for Michigan State. And generally speaking, I think this was one of their worst games of the season.
It was, and I talked about last week how a lot of this would depend on which Mississippi State shows up. The wrong Mississippi State showed up. And to Michigan State's credit, I think this was one of their better games all season, especially from their guards. If I think Jaden Akins had one of his better games in probably a couple of months, maybe a couple of weeks. And they seemed a lot tougher on the boards, and in general, they had a more complete effort out of their guards, who just shot lights out. It seemed like pretty much whatever remotely open look they had, they made it, whether it was mid-range, whether it was a three-pointer. If they saw something that was there, they made something out of it. Defensively, they did not give Mississippi State a lot of good looks, and they were able to be a lot more aggressive on the boards, which, again, is a little bit perplexing considering that Mississippi State did have a size advantage underneath and enough depth to make something out of that. And even then, when you just look at the highlights from that game, you see Sparty going after a lot more boards and being a lot more aggressive in a lot of those instances. Like if a rebound bounced around a little bit, it would somehow land in the hands of a Michigan State player who was just hustling a little bit more for it. So I also do think that the experience of Michigan State in the tournament compared to Mississippi State's lack thereof really showed, and you can point to any facet of the game to look for that. As I said, the hustle on Michigan State's part really showed, and with Mississippi State, they just weren't able to hold on.
Yeah, I mean, look, rebounding is difficult, you know, because to me it's part size, part grit, part technique, and part just sheer luck, you know. Sometimes, you know, weird things happen with, you know, it's a round ball. Things can happen. Things can take bad bounces and everything. But, yeah, I think the rebounding thing was sort of the probably the one of the more disappointing aspects of that game, because you just sort of figure that's part of State's identity this year.
Yeah, overall, Michigan State out-rebounded them 35-29, and when it came to defensive rebounds, out-rebounded them 24-16. So when Mississippi State missed shots, they usually did not get another chance to make up for it.
Yeah, no, usually if you know, your opponent has anywhere near the number of offensive rebounds as you defensive, you're going to be in for a bad time.
Yeah, and again, one of the other things I've talked about with Mississippi State is there are instances where they don't get enough of an effort from everybody. You know, one or two players will go off, and then the rest of the roster will struggle to either put points on the board or contribute in a way that almost goes beyond the box score. I think if Josh Hubbard did not have the game that he had on Thursday, this game would not have been as close as it was. And if not for his three-point shooting, they would not have been able to get much. It just seemed like Tolu Smith was still playing like he was very hurt and not himself. It felt like they weren't quite able to get a ton out of the bigs, which, again, is just a matter of not a ton of aggression. I also do think that, you know, I think Cameron Matthews got dealt a pretty bad hand with getting two fouls early, and that just kind of shook up Mississippi State's game plan pretty much out of the gate, because he picks up those two fouls, their best defensive player, and he has to go on the bench. And Michigan State took advantage of that pretty quickly and pretty often.
Yeah, and then, you know, Cameron Matthews also was your leading offensive rebounder, too, with four. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, it was a good day to be an offensive rebounder.
Yeah, great day to be offensive rebounder, but just for Mississippi State, not quite enough.
Yeah, I was looking through kind of Mississippi State's games this year on Bartorvik, and a 40.7% offensive rebound rate on defense is one of their it is one of their poorer efforts this year. I think just taking a casual look at it, looks like the Bethune-Cookman the South Carolina game. I can't read straight across lines, apparently. It looks like the South Carolina game was like their worst of the season at 45.5, but yeah, no, 40.7 is not going to cut it, especially because they really struggled defensively.
Yeah, and again, Cameron Matthews fouling out early and not being able to play as frequently as Chris Jens would have liked didn't help at all. And again, it goes back to a lot of that aggression, and Michigan State just got a more complete effort from their guards. As I mentioned, Jaden Akins had one of his better games. Tyson Walker having 19 points and Malik Hall having 10 as a forward. Just overall, they got a lot out of their guards, and their forwards were able to do enough in the front court, and their bench pieces were able to help out quite a bit.
Yeah, no, they jumped out to a 20-8 lead approaching the halfway mark of the first half, and it just never really got all that much better. I mean, they did go on a little bit of a run to cut it to like 7. I think they maybe got down to like 5 at one point, but I mean, really, it was never all that. I don't think Michigan State fans were sweating this one out.
Not really. I think early on they were really able to establish themselves. And again, aside from a couple of Josh Hubbard threes, which may have gotten some people nervous on Michigan State's side, I don't think Mississippi State was able to get enough going where they were able to really give the Spartans that much of a scare.
You know, I shudder to think what Mississippi State's outside shooting would have been like this year without Josh Hubbard. I mean, really, you could say that about like anything that they've done offensively this year without Josh Hubbard. But I tried to do the math, and it looks like, you know, Hubbard was 3-for-11 from three, which is not great. But without him, they were 3-for-16.
Yeah, and again, this was a guy who started the year off on the bench, and Chris Jans later in the season wisely was able to work him more into the starting lineup. Even if we're just looking at it from more of a surface-level standpoint, he led the team with 17 points a game. Tolu Smith had 15. The next guy, Cameron Matthews, had 9.4. Really, really steep drop-off, and something they're probably going to have to account for, given that Tolu Smith is one of a couple of guys who's out of eligibility.
Yeah, he had 15 points against Michigan State. Not only was that team high, he was also the only one in double digits, which, again, not great. He also played 34 minutes, so pretty much the entire game, especially considering that this one was pretty out of hand in like the second half of the second half. Mm-hmm. So, and I think sort of kind of going off what I was saying about states or the Bulldogs outside shooting, once again, for the second straight episode, I keep doing this to myself, was that Michigan State also just, I mean, they just shot really well the entire game. You know, they were 50% from the field, 43.5% from three. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's hard to beat.
It is, and from what I was able to see, both when watching the game on Thursday and looking back at a couple of highlights, offensively, things just seemed a little bit more smooth, and they was able to translate into a lot more looks. And because of how well the offense flowed, it would be result in instances where even if you miss a basket, and as we know, the rebounding, Michigan State very much out-rebounded, missed the Bulldogs, they were able to make that translate into some great looks and in turn some great shots.
Yeah, and then also, here's just like kind of a random stat. Michigan State only shot 6 free throws.
Yeah, I mean, they were able to, again, they were able to make quite a bit happen without a ton of contact. And when you're in that situation, and it also got to a point where the game was long enough where Mississippi State didn't try to foul late, so that probably bowed into it. But even then, they were 5 for 6.
Yeah, no, it was just kind of an interesting thing, because you figure with the way that those two teams play that both those teams would have been going to the line a bunch.
Yeah, very true.
So here is something that, I mean, we talked about it last time, but, you know, sort of just for this program, like getting into the tournament is a big step, especially back-to-back years, you know, and especially with it coming in the first 2 years of Chris Jans being here. But can you sustain it is the thing.
Right. You know, going off of that, it's very much true that this program took some very noticeable steps forward in 2023-24. They had some really big wins over Tennessee, were able to get another big one over Auburn, and they were able to compete with a lot of the SEC's best and made it to the conference semis and made it to the tournament outright, which was a step forward from the year before where they only made the first four. There is very noticeable steps forward being taken by this program. It's really just a matter of, are these steps forward big enough steps forward? And if so, then great. And if not, what's it going to take to be able to take even bigger steps forward? It being winning a tournament game, going even deeper, being an even bigger contender in the SEC, or perhaps even winning, going on a deep run in March. So those are some questions that are going to have to be asked probably in the near future with the way that the offseason moves after the national championship ends.
Yeah, and then, you know, I brought this up last week, but, you know, this is their first time making consecutive tournaments, say what you will about the first four, since 2008-2009. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, just important from a historical standpoint of, you know, like, this doesn't really happen all that often around here, but also I think maybe, like, just kind of how low the bar is.
True, and again, even if you look at the end of the season thinking that, oh, they could have gotten more out of it, they could have at least gotten a tournament win, sure. But I think at the very least that this program has really earned the trust of a lot of the fan base again. I think that there is much more of a belief that, hey, we can get something done. We can make a lot of noise. We can be a really fun team year in and year out.
Yeah, and then right now, State is currently 34th in KenPom. Like, things will shake up as the tournament progresses, so this is tentative. But it is their highest since 2019, which, say what you will, but I mean, I think that's progress of a step forward. They finished 53rd last year, and again, just getting into the tournament without having to play in Dayton is some, like, tangible sign of progress.
It definitely is, and it's a sign that, you know, things are headed in the right direction using the style of play that Chris Jans was able to do, and it's pretty admirable that he was able to do that, especially with having to deal with a couple of roster things throughout the year. He didn't have Tolu Smith until New Year's. He lost Keyshawn Murphy for personal reasons for a couple of games, which I think affected their depth. And they lost another player. I think Andrew Taylor ended up leaving the team after taking personal days off.
Yeah, I think they ended up with roughly the same SEC record too, which I think that's probably the next like benchmark, is finish with a winning record in conference play, which is, granted, getting harder every year.
Yeah, it's not getting much of an easier conference. Say what you will about Kentucky, they're still gonna be really good in the regular season. Alabama, Tennessee, Ole Miss, you have to think will improve. Auburn, same thing. Again, a lot of very, very viable teams in there.
I do think you're starting to see at least some kind of blueprint. I mean, granted, it's only 2 years in, so maybe this is just, you know, sort of him trying to make the most out of what is available to him over these first 2 years. But, I mean, these two state teams are very similar.
They are very similar. And listen, Chris, some of the biggest things that Chris Jan wants to do is he wants to rebound well. He wants to demonstrate toughness, and he wants to be able to just be able to work the inside more. And they definitely did those things better than they did last year. That said, I do think that going into the offseason, he'll try to get more out of each of those areas. But again, in those three particular areas, they did get a lot better.
I mean, you know, the first year they finished ninth in, you know, defensive efficiency on KenPom. This year they finished 22nd, which that sounds, you know, I mean, that sounds worse, and it is. But in the grand scheme of things, it's still really, really good. And then this year they saw, you know, tremendous improvement on offense. Granted, you know, you didn't have Josh Hubbard last year.
Yeah, very true.
But, I mean, they went from 176th to 69th. So, you know, there are – if you're worried about the offense, I guess that is nice to know. There are signs of progress. And they went from being, you know, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country, if not the worst. They might have been the worst last year. To being, I guess, slightly below mediocre at shooting the three this year. So, I mean, I guess that's progress too. But, I mean, both years they were, you know, just really good rebounding teams, at least on the offensive glass. You know, again, just stifling defense. So maybe that's the identity here.
It is. And again, I do think that as much as those three pillars of toughness, rebounding, and post play are going to be things that Chris Jans harps on, I do think he'll need to get a little bit more out of his guards, or just a lot more out of his roster in general. You can't have quite as many games where you rely on Josh Hubbard to make five threes a game while your post game struggles and you're not able to out-rebound quite as well. They do have a couple of guys coming in. Eric Payman, Mississippi Player of the Year. Delquan Warren, if I'm pronouncing his name right, and a center coming in. So those are guys that can really add to that, more of a complete effort.
Now, if you were not exactly encouraged by State's performance without Tolu Smith when he was hurt earlier in the season, bad news is he's done.
He doesn't have any eligibility, along with DJ Jeffries and Deshaun Davis. There are Cam Matthews and Shaquille Moore have the option to stay. We are not sure if they will or not. So definitely a lot of holes to fill. And the other thing being, with how rampant the transfer portal is, not just in college sports, but I feel like especially in college basketball, I'm sure as we speak, he's probably in an effort to try to make sure he can keep as much of that roster as possible, because you never know what underclassmen who you think might stick around might end up testing the portal. So he does have a lot of work to do in the near future.
Yeah, no, as you know, nice as it would be to sit around and think about, you know, just imagine, you know, X player when they, you know, considering how good they look as like a freshman or whatever, just, you know, as an underclassman, imagine how good they'll be in 2-3 years, right? It's always easy to think about that. But between, you know, the NBA draft and the portal and just everything going on, you can never feel too comfortable thinking about that, can you?
No, and it's very much a year-to-year thing. If you're a big-time program that has the ability to really keep guys and make sure that you have the resources, or at least the promise of winning a championship to where they don't leave, then that's it. But that's not a lot of programs, and most programs, Mississippi State included, it's very much a year-to-year thing, and again, a lot of work is going to have to be done to try to add more pieces to this roster to make it more complete and keeping a lot of the impact players who can still stay.
I will say, though, getting like a top 20 KenPom team in the 8-9 matchup is a pretty rough draw.
Yeah, and that a team of that level with that kind of experience, which again, I think showed in all facets of the game.
You know, I know it's been a bit since Tom Izzo has gone along like a really good classic March Izzo run. You know, they haven't really been, they haven't been past the Sweet 16 since 2019, but drawing Tom Izzo in the first round, it just doesn't sound like a fun time.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of coaches who are able to match that.
I gotta say though, it's been a tough year for the SEC in the tournament.
Oh yeah, very much so. I mentioned Kentucky, I mentioned Auburn. They really had a tough South Carolina. I think there was about, those are some big ones that, I mean, in South Carolina's case, I'd argue they got a really tough draw in Oregon because there's usually at least one 11 seed that comes into the tournament scorching hot, and suddenly they're in the second weekend. But the others with Kentucky and Auburn, I think for a lot of times it's like they did not play their best game. With Kentucky, I'm not sure how you don't realize that Oakland plays a zone until halfway through the game, but that obviously wasn't terribly promising. I do think Alabama, if things break right, can give North Carolina a run for their money. And Tennessee, while they look a lot more favorable than in years past, there is that stigma around Rick Barnes about his ability to go really far, which, you know, you could speak to a lot more than I can.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just something that we point out every year is, you know, sort of, okay, this is going to be the year that they break through, and then they lose by, like, the Sweet 16 or whatever, and get bounced by, like, a double-digit seed or whatever, in just classic Rick Barnes fashion. But, I mean, things are going okay. I mean, they did their best this past weekend to blow that. They really did. But in spite of themselves, they managed to pull it out.
They have a really tough matchup.
Yeah, and I feel like Rick Barnes has got to make an Elite Eight. Just to shake the, at least start making an attempt to shake it. I don't think one Elite Eight appearance will do it, but, you know, it could help.
Yeah, it would be a step in the right direction, if nothing else.
But, yeah, no. I mean, it's just, you know, looking at the Auburn and Kentucky upsets, I mean, that's rough for the conference. And then, you know, Florida losing a tough one to Colorado. You know, Florida was a team that, you know, kind of a trendy pick to be like a, you know, second weekend team. Didn't happen. You know, South Carolina, look, people like me will tell you that they are who we thought they were. But, you know, that's probably also pretty disappointing for the conference for them to get bounced early. You know, it's been a tough one, but you know what? Serves Greg Sankey right for thinking that auto bids are overrated or whatever.
Yeah, those words have not aged well, have they?
It was like the basketball gods saw that and just started rubbing their hands together.
It's just like, oh really? You don't like those auto bids? Okay, why don't we try and make something happen?
And you're going to lose to Oakland, and you're going to lose to Yale, and whoops, you only have one team left, sorry.
Oh, here's one Oregon upset for you, South Carolina. Have a good day.
I mean, it was pretty brutal.
Why do I feel like a lot of times the conference that gets the most teams in has the toughest time in March? Like, I feel like that's something that happens at least a couple of times every, like, throughout a 10-year span.
I don't know. I just sort of figured that one of these years I will stop picking Mountain West teams. At least Mountain West teams not named San Diego State. They're still okay in my eyes.
I was about to say, the Mountain West instilled a lot of faith in us the last March Madness, and, you know, I don't think they gave us a ton of reason to not believe it heading into this year and throughout most of this year.
But, you know, between, you know, Boise State and Nevada and New Mexico, I feel very disappointed. Oh, and Colorado State, too.
Yeah, Colorado State. That was a pretty trendy one with because I think there was a stat about how at least something along the lines of, it's not exact, but about how a lot of first four teams will end up in the second weekend and possibly further. Yeah, New Mexico, I thought they were going to have a shot, but Clemson's length ended up being too much for them. And Baylor, as it turns out.
I was in attendance for that Clemson-New Mexico game. It was even worse because we had Baylor-Colgate before that. And so that game was a blowout. And so I was sitting there like, at least I'll get like a good game out of this one. And that Clemson-New Mexico game was over within like 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
I mean, 10 minutes of game time, but I mean, it was it was one of those games where, you know, you go on one of those runs, you get some momentum, you get the other team to call timeout, and everybody gets loud, right? And the score or the deficit is still like 12 points.
So they just weren't able to quite close the gap that that much?
I mean, it's just the hole was just so deep that, you know, if you have to go on a run to get it to within double, like low double digits, it's already over.
Yeah, very true.
But yeah, I don't know, just anything you wanted to touch on about, I mean, really anything?
Well, a lot of what I said earlier stands. Really intrigued to see how Mississippi State handles the offseason because, you know, again, they have three guys that are for sure gone. They have two guys who might be able to stay and might either go to the NBA or transfer out, and you may have to work the portal a little bit. So I think that you mentioned a bit of a low bar from a program standpoint for Mississippi State, but I think with this past season, they might just bring it up a lot higher, and that's going to result in an interesting offseason.
I mean, look, in this day and age, you have to go portaling.
Yeah, very much so.
Not only that, you really do need to nail your evaluations.
Oh, yeah, especially in – and as I said earlier, I think that I'm not sure if the portal affects a sport more than college basketball because, you know, with football, you've got 85 spots to fill. You can't fill 50% of them with transfers. You have to get a lot of recruits in there. But in basketball, it takes about two or three transfers and you can go from a team that's among the first four out to Final Four.
I mean, just off the top of my head, these are not teams that went far in March. I'm just thinking about the conference. I mean, you know, Florida had a guard pair of transfers in Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen. They were like one of the best in the conference. You know, Johnny Broome transfer for Auburn. I mean, like this is just the age that we live in.
Yeah, things can change on a dime.
But you know, you can if you want more of our Ole Miss or Mississippi State coverage, check out our lineup of newsletters at djournal.com/newsletters. And if you want to join the conversation with other fans, feel free to check out our Mississippi State Sports Discussion or Ole Miss Sports Discussion groups on Facebook. You can follow myself on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow James at jsmurphymedia. James, once again, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Brendan.
And thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a good one.